Sri Aurobindo, The Synthesis of Yoga. Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection. Chapter 4, The Perfection of the Mental Being, page 632. The fundamental idea of a yoga of self-perfection must be, under these conditions, a reversal of the present relations of the soul of man to his mental, vital, and physical nature. Man is, at present, a partly self-conscious soul, subject to and limited by mind, life, and body, who has to become an entirely self-conscious soul master of his mind, life, and body. Not limited by their claims and demands, a perfect self-conscious soul would be superior to and a free possessor of its many instruments. This effort of man to be master of his own being has been the sense of a large part of his past spiritual, intellectual, and moral strivings. In order to be possessor of his being with any complete reality of freedom and mastery, man must find out his highest self, the real man, or highest Purusha in him, which is free and master in its own inalienable power. He must cease to be the mental, vital, physical ego, for that is always the creation, instrument, and subject of mental, vital, physical nature. This ego is not his real self, but an instrumentation of nature by which it has developed a sense of limited and separate individual being in mind, life, and body. By this instrumentation, he acts as if he were a separate existence in the material universe. Nature has evolved certain habitual limiting conditions under which that action takes place. Self-identification of the soul with the ego is the means by which she induces the soul to consent to this action and accept these habitual limiting conditions. While the identification lasts, there is this self-imprisonment in this habitual round and narrow action, and until it is transcended, there can be no free use by the soul of its individual living, much less a real self-exceeding. For this reason, an essential movement of the yoga is to draw back from the outward ego sense, by which we are identified with the action of mind, life, and body, and live inwardly in the soul. The liberation from an externalized ego sense is the first step towards the soul's freedom and mastery. When we thus draw back into the soul, we find ourselves to be not the mind, but a mental being who stands behind the action of the embodied mind, not a mental and vital personality. Personality is a composition of nature, but a mental person, Manomaya Purusha. We become aware of a being within who takes his stand upon mind for self-knowledge and world knowledge, and thinks of himself as an individual for self-experience and world experience, for an inward action and an outward-going action, but is yet different from mind, life, and body. This sense of difference from the vital actions and the physical being is very marked, for although the Purusha feels his mind to be involved in life and body, yet he is aware that even if the physical life and body were to cease or to be dissolved, he would still go on existing in his mental being. But the sense of difference from the mind is more difficult and less firmly distinct. but still it is there. It is characterized by any or all of three intuitions in which this mental Purusha lives and becomes by them aware of his own greater existence. First, he has the intuition of himself as someone observing the action of the mind. It's something which is going on in him and yet before him as an object of his regarding knowledge. This self-awareness is the intuitive sense of the witness Purusha, Sakshi. Witness Purusha is a pure consciousness who watches nature and sees it as an action reflected upon the consciousness and enlightened by that consciousness, but in itself other than it. To mental Purusha, nature is only an action, a complex action of discriminating and combining thought, of will, of sense, of emotion, of temperament and character, of ego feeling, which works upon a foundation of vital impulses, needs, and cravings in the conditions imposed by the physical body. But it is not limited by them, since it can not only give them new directions and much variation, refining, and extension, but is able to act in thought and imagination, and a mental world of much more subtle and flexible creations. But also, there's an intuition in the mental Purusha of something larger and greater than this present action in which he lives, a range of experience of which it is only a frontal scheme or a narrow superficial selection. By this intuition, he stands upon the threshold of a subliminal self with a more extended possibility than this superficial mentality opens to his self-knowledge. A last and greatest intuition is an inner awareness of something which he more essentially is, something as high above mind as mind is above the physical life and body. This inner awareness is his intuition of his supramental and spiritual being. The mental Purusha can at any time involve himself again in the superficial action from which he is drawn back, live for a while entirely identified with the mechanism of mind, life, and body, and absorbedly repeat its recurrent normal action. But once that separative movement has been made and lived in for some time, he can never be to himself quite what he was before. The involution in the outward action becomes now only a recurrent self-oblivion from which there is a tendency in him to draw back again to himself and to pure self-experience. It may be noted, too, that the Purusha, by drawing back from the normal action of this outward consciousness, which has created for him his present natural form of self-experience, is able to take two other poises. He can have an intuition of himself as a soul in body, which puts forth life as its activity and mind as the light of that activity. This soul in body is the physical conscious being, Anamaya Purusha, which uses life and mind characteristically for physical experience, all else being regarded as a consequence of physical experience, does not look beyond the life of the body and, so far as it feels anything beyond its physical individuality, is aware only of the physical universe, and at most its oneness with the soul of physical nature. But he can have, too, an intuition of himself as a soul of life, self-identified with a great movement of becoming in time, which puts forth body as a form or basic sense image, and mind as a conscious activity of life experience. This soul in life is the vital conscious being, Pranamaya Purusha, which is capable of looking beyond the duration and limits of the physical body, of feeling an eternity of life behind and in front, an identity with a universal life being, but does not look beyond the constant vital becoming in time. These three Purushas are soul forms of the spirit by which it identifies its conscious existence with and founds its action upon any of these three planes or principles of its universal being. But man is characteristically a mental being. Moreover, mentality is his highest present status in which he is nearest to his real self, most easily and largely aware of spirit. His way to perfection is not to involve himself in the outward or superficial existence, nor is it to place himself in the soul of life or the soul of body, but to insist on the three mental intuitions by which he can lift himself eventually above the physical, vital, and mental levels. This insistence may take two quite different forms, each with its own object and way of proceeding. It is quite possible for him to accentuate it in a direction away from existence and nature, a detachment, a withdrawal from mind, life, and body. He may try to live more and more as the witness Purusha, regarding the action of nature without interest in it, without sanction to it, detached, rejecting the whole action, withdrawing into pure conscious existence. This is the Sankhya liberation. He may go inward into that larger existence of which he has the intuition, and away from the superficial mentality, into a dream state or sleep state, which admits him into wider or higher ranges of consciousness. By passing away into these ranges, he may put away from him the terrestrial being. There's even, it was supposed in ancient times, a transition to supramental worlds from which a return to earthly consciousness was either not possible or not obligatory. The definite and sure finality of this kind of liberation depends on the elevation of the mental being into that spiritual self of which he becomes aware when he looks away and upward from all mentality. That is given as the key to entire cessation from terrestrial existence, whether by emergence in pure being or a participation in supercosmic being. But if our aim is to be not only free by self-detachment from nature, but perfected in mastery, this type of insistence can no longer suffice. We have to regard our mental, vital, and physical action of nature, find out the knots of its bondage, and the loosing points of liberation, discover the keys of its imperfection, and lay our finger on the key of our perfection. When the regarding soul, the witness Purusha, stands back from his action of nature and observes it, he sees that it proceeds of its own impulsion by the power of its mechanism, by force of continuity of movement, continuity of mentality, continuity of life impulse, continuity of an involuntary physical mechanism. At first, the whole thing seems to be the recurrent action of an automatic machinery, although the sum of that action mounts constantly into a creation, development, evolution. He was as if seized in this wheel, attached to it by the ego sense, whirled round and onward in the circling of the machinery. A complete mechanical determinism, or a stream of determinations of nature to which he lent the light of his consciousness, is the natural aspect of his mental, vital, and physical personality, once it is regarded from this stable, detached standpoint, and no longer by a soul caught up in the movement and imagining itself to be part of the action. But on a farther view, we find that this determination is not so complete as it seemed. Action of nature continues and is what it is because of the sanction of the Purusha. The regarding Purusha sees that he supports and in some way fills and pervades the action with his conscious being. He discovers that without him could not continue, and that where he persistently withdraws this sanction, the habitual action becomes gradually enfeebled, flags, and ceases. His whole active mentality can be thus brought to a complete stillness. There is yet a passive mentality which mechanically continues, but this too can be stilled by his withdrawal into himself, out of the action. Even then, the life action in its most mechanical parts continues, but that too can be stilled into cessation. It would appear then that he is not only the upholding Bhartri Purusha, but in some way the master of his nature, Ishvara. It was the consciousness of this sanctioning control, this necessity of his consent, which made him, in the ego sense, conceive of himself as a soul or mental being with a free will determining all his own becomings. Yet the free will seems to be imperfect, almost illusory, since the actual will itself is a machinery of nature, and each separate willing determined by the stream of past action and the sum of conditions it created. Although, because the result of the stream, the sum, is at each moment a new development, a new determination, it may seem to be a self-born, willing, virginally creative at each moment. What he contributed all the while was a consent behind, a sanction to what nature was doing. He does not seem able to rule her entirely, but only choose between certain well-defined possibilities. There is in her a power of resistance, born of her past impetus, and a still greater power of resistance born of the sum of fixed conditions she has created, which she presents to him as a set of permanent laws to be obeyed. He cannot radically alter her way of proceeding, cannot freely affect his will from within her present movement, nor, while standing in the mentality, get outside or above her in such a way as to exercise a really free control. There is a duality of dependence. Her dependence on his consent, his dependence on her law and way and limits of action, determination denied by a sense of free will nullified by the actuality of natural determination. He is sure that she is his power, but yet he seems to be subject to her. He is the sanctioning Anumantri Purusha, but does not seem to be the absolute Lord Ishvara. Pausing, mid page 637, to be continued.